Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Worker unrest in America. 650,000 workers either on strike or ready to walk out. Meanwhile, how the writer's strike has affected movie and TV production. And on the show today, the Florida Education Association and the United Electrical Workers, Local 506 in Erie, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Tuesday, July 25th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. Andrew Spahr is going to be our first guest on the show today. Andrew serves as president of the Florida Education Association, feaweb.org. He's been president for about 3 years now. And throughout his career, he served on committees and task forces for the American Federation of Teachers. At the Florida Education Association, he spent 8 years on the executive cabinet, also served on the executive board of the Florida AFL-CIO, and was secretary treasurer of that organization from January of 2016 until he took over the Florida Education Association in September of 2020. And he's a quite an accomplished musician, a violinist. Since age six, he earned his bachelor's degree in music education from The Ohio State University. Then he went down to Florida, Daytona Beach, to teach at the Torrey T. Small Elementary School, where more than 90% of the students, lived in poverty. As a music teacher, Andrew soon found his voice as an advocate and has worked ever since on behalf of public school students, schools, teachers, and education staff professionals. And he recalls, "I could not read when I was in first grade. I struggled in school, but the educators in my life were empowered to make my success a priority, and that's just what they did. I want the same world for my family and for all of Florida's children." Well, that is a very difficult task with what's been going on in the state of Florida. And here's the latest. The Florida Board of Education has approved a very controversial set of academic standards for African-American social studies classes in K through 12 schools. The standards, which were released last week, as Governor Ron DeSantis and other Florida Republicans have continued a crusade against public education, include language that states slaves develop skills which, in some instances, could be applied for their personal benefit. Whoa, that got a lot of reaction, including from the American Federation of Teachers. Randy Weingarten said, "This is disgusting. Normally publishing a grievously racist notion like slaves benefited from slavery would be considered an embarrassment and quickly withdrawn. Not in Florida. It's seen as a badge of honor." As a result of what's been going on in Florida, there's a lot of teachers saying, "You know what, I'm done with this profession. I'm out of here." And Andrew has addressed that on the show. The good news is this. The Florida Education Association has gained 5,000 members despite what's going on. In May, DeSantis pushed through a law that limited the ability of public employee unions to automatically collect dues from union members' paychecks. Well, the police and firefighters unions, who are supporters of DeSantis, were exempt from those measures. After the provisions went into effect, the impacted unions were concerned their membership would drop. Well, guess what? Just the opposite occurred. The Florida Education Association has seen its membership grow over the last month as non-union teachers, alarmed by what the governor is doing, have sought union membership. Andrew's quoted as saying, we have people coming in who are saying, hey, how do I join the union? I want to join the union. Teachers are saying, I can't believe what's happening in the state of Florida. We need to have a voice. How can I get involved in the union? So, interesting scenario, what's going on in Florida, which is attracting national attention. Scott Slauson will be joining us later in the show on behalf of the United Electrical Workers. That would be Local 506. They're based in Erie, Pennsylvania. Scott's been president of that local for the past 9 years, representing the workers of the former General Electric Transportation Division, which is now called Wabtec. They build locomotives for the entire world. And now they're on strike. The workers at Wabtec. Turns out when Wabtec purchased the plant back in 2019, members of Scott's union, that's the United Electrical Radio and Machine Workers, they took immediately to picket lines and stayed there for 9 days. Now, the current strike, which began June 22nd, when the union rejected the company's most recent proposal, will be three times as long as that strike, going back almost 4 years ago. The company and the union held their last negotiation session with a federal mediator on Friday, and they do not plan to meet again until later this week. When they met last week, it didn't last very long. According to the union's description posted on their website, the union and company met at 10:03. The company left at 10:09. 6 minutes. They stayed there for 6 minutes. That was it. So this is a company, again, a profitable company. They're building locomotives. And the workers have to do better than what they're getting right now. And apparently they're pretty far apart. But Scott will give us all the details as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Now a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. Bloomberg News reports today that over 650,000 workers threatening to strike this summer or already doing so. The article attributes the rise in union activity to the after effects of the pandemic, a shift toward remote and digital work, increase income inequality, and throw in the rising cost of living. The surge in strikes includes actors and writers in Hollywood who are dealing with shifting profit models due to the rise of streaming. You got workers from UPS and Detroit's big three automakers also poised to join if contract talks fall through. By the way, the Teamsters are meeting with UPS today. One Bank of America Corporation analyst is estimating the odds of a strike by the UAW over 90%. Over 90%. That's a big issue there, especially the two-tiered wage system. Meanwhile, new data from the second quarter of the year shows the impact of the writer's strike on Hollywood. Movie and TV production in Los Angeles has plummeted, and the second quarter of the year saw a 28% drop in what they call shoot days from the same period last year. According to the LA Times, a shoot day is defined as one crew getting permission to film at least one location during a single 24-hour period, and the number of shoot days measures the amount of production in the region. TV was hit the hardest. 36% fall in shoot days. And TV dramas and comedies each had over 60% fewer shoot days than the same period last year. The second quarter data did not capture the effects of the actor strike, which began after the second quarter ended. No talks scheduled in both of those. And the writers went on strike May 2nd. Last week, two federal courts of appeals issued decisions in favor of workers who are trying to avoid arbitrating their claims. First on Thursday, the South Circuit ruled that Papa John's could not enforce an arbitration agreement against a worker who claimed he never saw it. Andrew Bazemore sued Papa John's on behalf of delivery drivers in Kentucky for allegedly violating federal wage and hour laws. According to Baysmore, the company reimbursed him for driving costs at roughly half the recommended rate. And as a result, his wages were lower than both federal and state minimum wage. The company argued that Baysmore had signed an agreement to arbitrate disputes, but the court on Thursday held that there was no reason to prevent a jury from believing Baysmore's claim that he never saw that agreement. Get this one. Next month, the In-N-Out burger chain will begin banning workers in five states from wearing masks. Employees in Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, Texas, and Utah will face disciplinary action up to and including termination if they wear masks in violation of the policy. The company will have an exception for employees with specific medical conditions that require them to wear masks. Boy, I hope so. And those employees, by the way, will have to provide a valid medical note. Employees in Oregon and Nevada can continue wearing store-provided N95 masks. The separate guidelines for those states are likely based on differences in state laws. California state law requires employers to let their employees wear masks. You never thought it would get to this stage, did you? And got to give a shout-out here to Teamster Local 777. And their president over there, Jim Glimko, we had him on the show, I want to say maybe about 2 months ago. Well, 777 has reached a tentative agreement for cannabis consultants and agents in charge at Zen Leaf Dispensaries in Chicago and Schaumburg, Illinois. The parent company, Verano, is the third multi-state operator the local 777 has successfully bargained agreements with after launching a campaign to organize the cannabis industry less than 3 years ago. Jim is quoted as saying, "This contract includes monumental improvements that the workers on this committee fought incredibly hard to achieve, and it's been a pleasure working alongside such a dynamic, energetic, brilliant, and tenacious group of trade unionists. If past is prologue, the future of the Chicago cannabis industry belongs to us." Improvements included in the agreement include wage increases ranging from 17% to 20% over the next 3 years, paid time off, employer-funded retirement contributions, overtime allocated by seniority, and the replacement of at-will employment with a just process for addressing disciplinary matters. Congratulations to Jim Glimko, president of Local 777, on behalf of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. All right, quick break. When we come back, Andrew Spahr, president of the Florida Education Association.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at USW.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you could find more at teamster.org. Flash.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. In fact, if you missed the show last week, just go to our podcast, awfpodcast.com. You can hear Melissa Cropper, president of the OFT, and she's also secretary treasurer of the Ohio AFL-CIO, in a battle right now with issue one, 2 weeks from today. All right, let's go to the state of Florida right now, and welcome back to the show. This guy is always putting out fires. Andrew Spahr is his name. He's the president of the Florida Education Association, feaweb.org. He's been president for almost 3 years now. Andrew, I bet you're second guessing here. When you took this job, you never expected to be in the news almost every other week here. The latest news has to deal with the policies of the Florida Board of Education, a very controversial set of standards for African American social studies classes, and this is from K through 12 schools. Andrew, welcome back to America's Workforce. Why don't you explain to our listeners what is going on now? Go ahead.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me back, Flash. It's always a pleasure to be with friendly voices on the radio. And yes, it's I certainly wouldn't have expected to be in a situation I'm in now where we're constantly not just battling for the soul of the public schools in the state of Florida, but we're battling for our voice, for our union, and to make sure that everyone who works in our schools is treated fairly and equitably. And, you know, you expect to do some of that, but the level of vitriol against those of us who work in public education, those of us who are union members in the state of Florida, is just off the chart. And so what we have right now is yet another attack on a group that the governor, you know, has decided are political adversaries, in this case, African Americans. And what the State Board of Education recently approved, after a very, very short process of about 4 months, a complete rewrite of the African American history standards. They put together a work group. Many of them on the work group were appointed by the governor directly. They added a few teachers in to that work group, and the work group had to demand to meet. That's how bad it was. The governor was trying to push these through without even the work group really doing anything other than being handed paper, say, sign off on it. And so there was all kinds of controversy even through the process, but these new standards are problematic in so many ways. And let me just quickly say the difference between what we're seeing now and what they're trying to move to. In elementary school, when you typically have standards, you typically say you want the kids to learn something. So you'll say things like students need to understand, or students need to compare and contrast, or students need to analyze. Those are common terms used in standards because it shows depth of understanding. And what these standards say in elementary is students just need to identify key African American figures in history. They don't need to know what they did. They don't need to know what their contributions are to society or why they're important in history. Then it goes on to middle school, which is one that we're hearing a lot about, the most controversial standard, where again it says that slavery may have actually provided a personal benefit to those who were enslaved. This crazy concept that somehow slavery may have been a good thing is what is in the standard, saying teachers must teach that. And it also is important to point out that from elementary school through eighth grade in Florida now, students will have no formal education under these standards on what's happened in African American history since the Emancipation Proclamation 150 years ago, since Reconstruction. And so that's concerning as well. And then high school, the standards have these massive gaps. For example, it talks about Brown versus the Board of Education, the landmark ruling from the Supreme Court ending segregation, but it leaves out the fact that Florida, as well as many other states, passed laws saying that the Supreme Court ruling was null and void in our state, and that it took years before segregation actually ended in Florida. That whole part of history, which is important, especially living in the state of Florida, is left out. And that's just one of many examples where we see massive gaps in the learning, and it seems like an intentional whitewashing of these standards. And, you know, as people, as an educator, as someone who cares about our country, you know, there's that old saying, if we don't learn from our history, we're destined to repeat it. And that's, of course, one of the driving concerns around these standards. It's a revisionist history, a whitewashing again of what should be taught in schools. And it's deplorable in a lot of senses.
So, Andrew, this just happened, and this was the Florida Board of Education, and here we are. It's going to be August in a couple of days. School's going to start. When is this all supposed to take effect? I mean, they expect this to happen, like in a couple of weeks, or what? Or is there going to be some pushback on this?
There's definitely pushback. We're working with a lot of groups, including the NAACP and another group in Florida called Equal Ground, and another group called Florida Rising, and a bunch of other groups, League of Women Voters, and so on. So there's a broad coalition right now working on a strategy regarding to how we push back on this. But the expectation is these standards are going to start to be implemented this school year, with full implementation next school year. At least that's our understanding. The timing of it is a political timing. It's not an education. Sound timing. Again, usually when you rewrite standards, you spend at least a year with groups meeting regularly, going back, writing, having conversation, dialogue, rewriting. None of that happened with these standards. This was just a political move by the governor who wanted to say he rewrote the African American standards. And it's interesting because he's trying to spin it as if it's a good thing. He's trying to spin it and say that these rewrite of standards is to really add focus to African American history. It's just the wrong kind of focus, I guess you could say. And even I think it was yesterday, the governor came out in a statement trying to distance himself from what the state board just did. So now he's realizing the backlash is pretty severe, and he's got his campaign in a tailspin. So now he's trying to distance himself from something he pushed.
Well, Andrew, you got some support here, a whole lot of support from the American Federation of Teachers and Randy Weingarten. I was reading a statement earlier in the show, but Randy went on to say, we shouldn't have to debunk this, but let's do it anyway. Slave codes made it illegal to teach enslaved people to read and write. In his autobiography, Frederick Douglass famously wrote of how he was expressly forbidden by his master to learn how to read and write, and how he had become literate surreptitiously. Randy Weingarten, she speaks so well on these issues. That's all posted on the national website, aft.org. You know, another question here. They have to supply some books to back this this teaching, right? How is that going to happen in the state of Florida? You mentioned that it may take some time, but has anybody addressed that yet?
Yeah, no, there hasn't been. And keep in mind, Florida is in the process of rewriting its social studies standards. And so, you know, this is one aspect of those social studies or history standards in terms of African-American history. But we're still concerned with the overall rewrite of these standards and how it's going to treat key events in history. What we're seeing from this administration is they only want things that they want taught in our schools. That's why we're seeing the banning of books. That's why they're coming after the teachers' unions. That's why they're trying to limit what kids learn through these standards and through all of these other measures that they're taking here in the state of Florida. And, you know, keep in mind, these standard rewrites is a continuation of what the governor started last year when he decided he was going to put his name out there for running for president. And the first thing he passed was the Stop Woke Act, what he called the Stop Woke Act, which said you can't have CRT taught in our schools, which never has been taught in our schools, but they broadened CRT, critical race theory, and they broadened that whole conversation to include any discussions about race and the implications of race, and you can't make kids feel uncomfortable. And, you know, any educator will tell you that when you're learning something new and to really grow, you're probably going to feel uncomfortable. That's why we say get outside your comfort zone very often, right? It's this idea that in order to learn, sometimes you have to be uncomfortable. That's how you truly process and learn and grow. And so, you know, that started last year. And then, of course, we've seen him banning diversity, equity, and inclusion in the K-12 system and at the higher ed level, which is, again, crazy when you think about it, because this notion of being able to understand different cultures, to understand different races, to be inclusive of all those around you is important, not just in our society and our families, but it's also important in the business world, which is why businesses have been pushing for diversity, equity, inclusion, because when they hire individuals in this global economy, they want to hire people who can interact with folks from all over the world. And so it really is counter to competitiveness. And what we're seeing in Florida and has us concerned is we're making Florida less competitive when it comes to education and less competitive when it comes to getting out to the workforce.
Andrew Spahr joining us on our live line today. He's president of the Florida Education Association. Website is feaweb.org, feaweb.org. Despite what's going on, there are a lot of teachers that are joining the Florida Education Association. We'll talk about that next. Later in the show, we're going to check in with Scott Slauson with the United Electrical Workers Local 506 on strike at Wabtec in Erie, Pennsylvania. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at CWA-union.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings. So please keep them coming. And if you like a show, I keep saying this, share that show. It's important that you share that show and then that person shares the show, because America's workforce, thankfully, is exploding because of that. We are now in the top 5% of all podcasts in the world. We broadcast out of Cleveland, but we podcast to the world. Heard in 49 out of 50 states and 9 of 12 provinces in Canada and growing. All right, let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Andrew Spahr, president of the Florida Education Association. A lot of crazy things happening in Florida, but the teachers, well, I guess they're some teachers I know have left. That has happened. They're saying, you know what, I didn't get into this profession to deal with this madness. But then again, you've got teachers joining the union. And Andrew, you got to be pretty happy about this. What was it like the last month of the school year? How many members joined the Florida Education Association? What's that number again?
Yeah, we grew by over 5,000 members in the last month of the school year. And it's important to remember that Florida is a right to work for less state. So people do not have to belong to their union. And there are a lot of folks who support the union who make a decision not to pay their union dues and be part of the union. In Florida, if they're not part of the union, we don't represent them. We don't represent them in grievances. We don't represent them in arbitrations. We don't represent them in disciplinary hearings. They certainly benefit from the contract, But of course, they don't recognize, and that's why I say right to work for less, because they don't realize that when we're not standing together in unity, things can happen to us, and we're not as successful as we could be if we certainly had, you know, 90-100% membership. So that's why we continue to push. But with what's happening in Florida right now, a lot of those folks who've been sitting on the sideline are saying, oh, wait, we better join, because this is not okay. We might lose our contract. We might lose our union. We might lose our voice. And so, therefore, we're seeing an increase in people joining right now.
That's interesting. So how many people do you have in the Florida Education Association altogether in the state of Florida?
We are right around 150,000. Hopefully we're continuing to grow. Now, keep in mind, we lost payroll deduction this year. We've got some court battles going on over that. And we are moving people over to what we call e-dues, another way for them to pay their union dues through bank draft. And so we are processing that and still moving people in that way. The date of that loss of payroll deduction was July 1, and with many of our schools getting ready to come back, you know, obviously it's important to make that transition. So we still have a tremendous amount of work for us. Our local union leaders all over the state, we have about 100 local unions, 100 local presidents, are working nonstop to try to make sure that we continue to keep our voice. Florida also changed the rules on what percentage you must have in order to protect your union. You have to have at least 60% of the bargaining unit as dues-paying members. Again, right to work for less states so people don't have to join. But if they don't and we're under 60%, we have to go through a very difficult process to maintain our union. And, you know, Florida has in our Constitution the right to join and belong to a union and form a union, as well as the right to have a contract negotiated collectively through and by that union. So if you lose your union in Florida, you lose your contract. And I want to add one other point on this. There are billionaires out there who are funding these shadow organizations, and I don't even want to name these shadow organizations, but they are big money shadow organizations who are spending millions of dollars in Florida trying to convince right now mostly teachers to drop their union, to quit their union. They're saying things like, oh, your district will take care of you. We all know our employers don't take care of us the way we want them to, and that's why we have a union. But they're saying things like that. They're trying to say, oh, your union doesn't do anything for you. I mean, they're really going out there trying to malign unions and mislead and misinform folks, and they're spending millions of dollars. These are the same groups that are tied to organizations like Moms for Liberty, which is an anti-public school organization funded by these same billionaires, and other groups that are part of the radical right that are really trying to shut down public education and the voice of workers, not just in Florida, but across the country. But they see Florida as their entry point to try to really start to make inroads into this. So we are in a real battle here in the state of Florida, going up against these billionaire-backed shadow organizations who are trying to silence teachers and other workers in the state of Florida.
Oh, Andrew, that's been going on all around the country. My question to you, are people buying into that? Is that having, I know they're multi-million dollar ad campaigns. Is it working, though, to some extent?
It is not, but we have been talking about how we get more proactive to make sure it never does, right? Like, we've got to be strategic in this fight. If we take things for granted, I think we run the risk of endangering who we are. So I think we have to be proactive, and that's what we've been doing. Our local leaders in this state have been fantastic, and you mentioned Randy Weingarten before, but the American Federation of Teachers has been extremely supportive. We're merged in Florida, so we belong to both the American Federation of Teachers and the National Education Association, and we have the support of both national unions in this work, and we are not taking anything for granted. I think the reason we saw a spike in membership at the end of the year that we will continue to see is our hope as we go into this school year, is because everyone is understanding what's going on. They understand this is a coordinated attempt to take away the voice of workers, and in our case specifically, teachers, staff, and professors, because they want to take down public education. They see public education as the path to the American dream, and there are some individuals out there who are greedy, and they do not want us to have that path. And they also recognize that the teachers union is the largest union in the Southeast. FEA is the largest union in the Southeast, one of the largest statewide unions in the nation. And if they can take us out, they can take everyone else out. And that's the strategy that the opposition has that we have to fight against.
Yeah, it's really sad, really sad. Public education now, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I've talked to various people on the show over the years, isn't like 90, it's got to be over 90% of children in America are educated in public schools. Isn't that pretty accurate?
That is accurate, and that's true here in Florida, too, where, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years now almost ago, they started vouchers and charters. And during that 25-year period, we went from 90% of kids attending public schools to today, almost 90% of kids attending public schools. So they've tried to privatize public education and have failed. And that's why they're attacking public schools the way they are now, trying to go after the teachers and the staff and the professors, trying to say we're doing nefarious things in our schools, because they see that as the way to take down public education, to create distrust. And, you know, it's a lot of historians have looked at it and talked about how that's what Hitler did, right? In Germany, was the first thing he went after was the education system. And if you look at any other dictators in time, that's what they do. They go after the education system first, because those are usually respected individuals who are educating the future, and they see them as a threat to what they want to do. And that's what we're seeing in Florida, a real assault, and not just in Florida, many other states too, but a real assault on those people who sacrifice so much to make sure that our kids get the education they deserve and need.
Let me add the media to your comment there. Education, yeah, let's attack the education system, and then also let's reform the media landscape. And they've done a pretty good job on that one. Andrew, I was reading your bio earlier in the show here, and I think this is a good time to explain to our listeners the value of public education, especially in your life, because you taught at a school where 90% of the students lived in poverty. You don't see a private school dealing with a situation like that, because the private schools cherry pick the students there. It's a whole different landscape there. But you found your voice in public schools. Can you speak to that for our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. I was someone who struggled with reading in an early age. I did not actually start to read until well into my first grade year. I was struggling, determined eventually that I have dyslexia. And so that's a learning difficulty that I've had to deal with my whole life and impacts a lot of aspects of the work that I do. But doesn't mean I'm not intelligent or anything like that. But I struggled with reading at an early age. And if it wasn't for teachers who took me under their wing, who saw me as a shy kid, I was extremely shy when I was younger, and teachers who looked out for me, who encouraged me, who told me I could be anything I wanted to be. Specifically, I could call out my kindergarten teacher, who really did get me to get outside of my comfort zone and start doing things. So many teachers throughout, but another one of my most impactful teachers is a teacher by the name of Dr. Goodwin. She has now passed away, but she was someone who really encouraged me in fifth and sixth grade. She was my reading teacher, and what I loved and took away from her was that you didn't have to have all the answers. You just needed to know where to go and get the answers. And so anytime you asked her a question, anytime anyone asked her a question, she used to say, "I don't know the answer to that, but let's go find out together." And of course, we didn't have Google back then. So it was, let's take out the encyclopedia, or let's take out this reference book and find out the answer. And that was so impactful to me to this day, just that whole mentality of you don't have to have all the answers. You just need to know where to go and get them.
Yeah. I think everybody has a special teacher or teachers in their life. I have one too. And I just had this conversation about a month ago. A teacher that I had was an English teacher in 12th grade. And I was a pretty good student. I was an AB student. And in fact, I had advanced English at one stage. And Pat Genchi was her name. And the first paper that I wrote for her, she gave me a D. And I go, "What the heck is this all about? Wait a minute. Why did you do this?" And she said to me, "You're better than that." She challenged me. And I took it to heart, and I ended up with an A in that class. But that's what teachers do. They have a profound effect. Some of them do. Some profound effect more than others. But that's the important part of public education. And I think there's a lot of stories out there. Thank you for sharing your story, Andrew. In the meantime, when does school start in Florida?
So most of our school districts, the first day of school for students will be August 10th. We start pretty early. We have a few school districts that start a week or two after that, mostly the South Florida districts. But most of our schools will start back up August 10th.
Well, good luck to you. You got your challenges over there. 3 years, president of the Florida Education Association. I see your name in print all the time. Andrew Spahr, feaweb.org. Florida Education Association. They're affiliated with the National Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers. Stay safe, stay strong, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon. Okay, brother?
Thanks, Flash. As always, be well. And listen, anyone can also follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, and I'm also on TikTok. So feel free to follow us through any of those. And Threads now, too.
There you go. And keep that organizing going on, okay?
Absolutely. Have a good one, Flash.
All right. Scott Slauson will be coming up next. He is president of the United Electrical Workers Local 506 on strike at Wabtec. He'll talk about it next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. You can find more at ulagency.org, ulagency.org. Let's go to Erie, Pennsylvania right now. Welcome back to the show, Scott Slauson. Scott is president of the United Electrical Workers Local 506, and he's president of 506 for the last 9 years, representing workers at the former General Electric Transportation Division, which is now called Wabtec. And they build locomotives that move the world. And right now, the workers are on strike, and for very good reason. Scott, welcome back to America's Workforce. I see the current strike. And there's been some labor unrest at this plant over the years prior to what's happening now. The current strike began June 22nd when the union rejected the company's most recent proposal. And it will be three times as long as the strike that happened 4 years ago. Scott, what's the story? What are you fighting for? Go ahead.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. You know, it's a longer strike, and it's ironic because the last time we were on strike of any major proportion with General Electric Transportation was 1969, where we were on strike for 102 days. In 2019, when Wabtec took over, they tried to bully their position, and we were on strike for 9 days then and finally resolved the contract. And this time around, it was kind of the same MO. They didn't want to basically change anything. They said that, you know, they were happy with the way things were and they wanted to keep things the same. Offered us a 2% pay raise and basically said, you know, this should do you for the next 3.5 years. And, you know, through out the negotiating process, the 2-month process we went through, they really never changed their position on anything. The last 4 years have been very difficult for our membership. The company has not treated the grievance process with the respect it deserves. Obviously, we've seen what's happened with inflation. And to be blunt, they want to, you know, have the ability to change or diminish our health care and control, you know, with no cost control over the next 4 years. So, you know, by and large, the membership rejected that. And, you know, they need to see some change.
There's also a 2-tier wage system, and I know that's got to frustrate you. New employees make, 37% less than other employees? How long has that been going on?
Yeah, that's something that started with LabTech. It's not a true 2-tier. It's actually a progression-based system. So very similar to what we had for years under General Electric, where you would start with GE, approximately 70% of your wage, and over a 5-year span, get up to your full rate. But with LabTech, it's a 10-year span, and you start at 66% of the full rate of the job, and over a 10-year period, you progress to what they call the legacy rate. But that's frustrating because, number one, it makes it very difficult to find the skill sets necessary to build locomotives. Most of the people in industry are already making that amount. So the other thing that it does is we used to have 7 to 10 years of a skill set to even get hired here. Nowadays they're taking anybody they can find, simply because they're having a hard time finding people at the $20 an hour range.
Yeah. So how many workers are we talking about that are on strike right now at Local 506?
Approximately 1,400.
Wow. So what's going on? They've hired replacement workers, I take it?
We do have some scabs. It's a low number. I think that, you know, we were going through a period where there wasn't a lot of work to be done to begin with. But we are coming into a point where we're going to be getting busy here again. So hopefully, you know, we see a shift in the company's thinking and they start seeing the light. It's been we're going on 5 weeks now. And the resolve of the membership is amazing. They are standing out there and they are basically proving a point that we're not going back without a decent contract.
Now, you mentioned it's a little slow right now, and it sounds like it's going to pick up. And we're talking about building locomotives here. I mean, there's a skill attached to this. I have to wonder, especially if you know, with management getting into the shop floor and doing this kind of thing, it makes me wonder of the quality of the work here. And I'm sure you're pretty concerned about that as well, right?
Well, yeah, obviously we are. We're concerned about a lot of things. Number one, the safety aspect of it. We're a VPP star certified site. So, there's the safety side of it that we worry about. Because let's face it, I'm sure every manager in there doesn't have it out for the union. Some of them probably very much agree with the reasons we're on strike. But the second thing is, recently one of our locomotives missed the transfer car and went into one of our pits and did a significant amount of damage. And that's a locomotive that, the workforce as a whole put a lot of their blood, sweat, and tears into to get it done. And through the strike, what we saw is even the most basics of jobs, such as moving a locomotive around the plant, management couldn't handle. So that pauses caution as to what other damage is being done inside that plant while we're on strike.
Scary stuff going on right now. Let's get back to the negotiations. Now, I was reading earlier that Oh, and this is according to your website. Website, by the way, is uelocal506.com. uelocal506.com. That the last time you met with the company, it went from 10:03 a.m. and then the company left 6 minutes later? Why did they even bother doing that, Scott?
You know, it's a good question. I'd like to know the answer myself, because quite honestly, they try to play the game that the union's not negotiating. But what you see is, you know, we hand them a proposal across the table. They look at it. We ask them if they have any questions. They say nope, and they walk out. And that's the end of it. I think 3 minutes of that was actually our international rep passing the proposal across, to the company and trying to explain it to them, which they really didn't even want an explanation. You know, as I started with this conversation, it's a negotiation like I've not had experience with before, because they don't want to negotiate. They want to dictate. And there's just a far cry difference between obviously negotiating and dictating. And our membership doesn't take well to being dictated to. So, there's a lot of health and safety concerns. There's, like I said, with health care, with pay, offering, a little bit of pay. If we take the wages, when we look at the wages over the last 4 years, essentially the wages have been suppressed by almost $7 an hour because of inflation. And, you know, what the company is offering is nowhere near that. What the union is asking for isn't even that much. We have a CEO who makes 255 times what the average worker at Wabtec makes in compensation. And quite honestly, his compensation package over the last 4 years alone has been higher than what they're willing to offer 1,400 workers in the Erie plant over the next 4 years. But yet, and I'm sure anybody that works in the shop has heard this, we have to remain competitive.
Right.
But it seems like they're unwilling to make the cuts at the top. And then on top of all that, you have what they do with the shareholders. I mean, it's no secret that Wabtec is authorized, over $1 billion in stock buybacks over the last 4 years, increased its dividends. So we'll take care of the shareholders, but we're not going to take care of the workforce.
Yeah. So typical in America today. All right, with everything that's going on here, and there's nothing planned right now? No talks planned in the not-too-distant future, Scott?
Actually, we're supposed to meet on the 26th, which is tomorrow.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens. Hopefully it lasts slightly longer than 6 minutes.
yeah, really?
But, what we're seeing is, right, the year of the strike. We're hearing about the Teamsters. We're hearing about UPS. You got the SAG. Amongst many others, because I think that workers in this country are getting fed up with being treated as less than and essentially being told continuously that you have to remain competitive or those at the top do not.
To your point, Scott, I had the story at the top of the show. 650,000 workers in America are either on strike or threatening to go on strike. And probably half of that amount would be the Teamsters at UPS. They represent about 340,000 drivers at UPS, and that deadline is Monday, yeah, July 31st, and they are meeting today, so we'll see what happens here. But right now, workers are staying strong, a lot of solidarity on the picket line. How's that looking?
It looks great. It's always a wonderful experience when you see that many workers gathered in one spot, and they're having fun with it. I mean, it is a struggle. Let's be clear about that. You're willing to give up part of your livelihood for a period of time to make a stand, and it's an impressive thing to see. But they are staying strong, and it's an amazing thing to watch, especially when we're 5 weeks into this and showing very little cracks in the armor. It's impressive for sure.
Well, Scott, you let us know what we can do here on America's Workforce. You have a voice here on this show. Scott Slauson, president of UE Local 506, based in Erie, Pennsylvania, 1,400 striking brothers and sisters there, building locomotives. UELocal506.com. You take care, and we'll talk down the road, okay, brother?
Thank you so much, and thank you for the time. I appreciate it. Take care.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the latest from the Heat and Frost Insulators and the problem with child labor in America. And the problems are growing. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.